From the time my first day of school and all the way through the eighth grade, I went to one location. And I rode my bicycle and I walked and all of that. It was not too far from the house. But the ninth grade, my last 4 years of school, I'll take that back. There was a couple years that I had a little different arrangement. But the ninth grade was a big adjustment. I went into a building that I'd never been in before. I met teachers that I'd never met before. I had students that were coming in from, anyway, it was a big adjustment for me. And I remember going, we didn't just have math class, now we had algebra. And I remember going to Algebra 1 and the teacher was a man. It was probably wasn't the first time I'd had a man for a teacher, but he was a pretty rugged older fella, and he was no nonsense, and he made a big impression on me. So about half, two-thirds through the year, maybe it was towards the end of the year, they had this thing some of the students went to, I was in the southeast corner of Missouri, and we went to Rolla for a math competition. And this come to my mind, so I'm going to share it. It's been so foggy back there, I've kind of dismissed it for years. But we went to Rolla, to the college up there. As an engineering school, and math was a very important part of that university. Went up there where all of the marble buildings are and went into this big hall, and we were divided up. And I remember before we went, they gave us a study guide, and I don't remember what it was. I don't remember being able to be very equipped. I didn't know what to expect. I never went to anything like this in my life. So I don't remember how many of us went, but there was a bus that, I don't know, all four grades of in high school, there was a number from each class, and we went up there, and I remember being handed this paper, and they said, don't turn it over until we tell you to, and then you've got so many minutes to answer all these questions. And the thing that they entered that I was part of was called algebra manipulation. I remember that. So we turned our papers over, and we went through that process, and when I got through, my head was kind of spinning, and it was like, why I'm here, so to speak. This was a lot of stuff on there that was, I felt like was over my head, and I'd done the best I could, and I was solving for X and Y and finding coordinates. I don't remember all the questions. I just remember it was like, I felt like I was underwater. It was just, I thought, a new place. I was a freshman in high school and barely had adapted to that. And here I was in this. And so we got, I don't remember, it was an all-day thing. We took multiple tests. I don't even remember the other ones that I took. But at the end, I don't know, it was probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they had an award ceremony. So I'm just sitting in there thinking, I'm in the whole room, hundreds of people in there. And of course they took all the different levels and all this stuff. And directly they started calling out the names of the scores. And I was trying to remember where did I place, but I just know I placed high enough or close enough to the top that they had to poke me. I had to get up and walk up to the front and go across the stage. And it was like, I was so startled about the whole thing. And we got back to school, and the next day the principal got on the intercom and congratulated me. And one more of my, it was a young man that was in, he was, I think, a senior that year. And we're the only ones that placed. I guess that's what they called it. That got to go walk across the stage. And so after the whole ordeal, it was just my head was just kind of spinning. I don't know, was I the only one or only two? There was only two of us that took the test, or was nobody else knew any of the answers, because I didn't feel like I knew all the answers. There was no way I got a perfect score. I don't even know that if you'd have graded me on a percentage, if I'd even passed. I don't know. There was either a lot of other people that knew a whole lot less than me, or I don't know. I just made some fortunate answers. But I was not comfortable. I was not confident. That's the point I want us to get. But I want to tell you that the judgment is like a test. But we come to service and we read our Bibles and we apply ourselves because we want to be prepared. There's a judgment coming. We want to have a level of confidence, not self-confidence, not I'm better than everybody else, but we want to hear Him say, well done. And I believe we can. It doesn't have to be this whirlwind experience to where we don't know. I had no idea when I went to that math competition. Well, I don't even remember what they called it now, but I had no idea when I went what the questions would be like. And I really had no aspiration of getting up out of my seat and walking up to the front and walking across the stage and shaking somebody's hand. That was not what I had thought it would be on my plate that day, because I was just completely overwhelmed. And many times I feel like that we look at the judgment like it's some kind of shake it up in a box and pour it out and, well, you passed. No, it's not that way. It's not the way God intends it to be, and it's not the way the reality is. We're going to make it because we have applied ourselves and we've conscientiously asked the Lord to work with us and cause us to be able to understand His will and His direction. That's how we're going to make it. And we can go and face the end with a level of confidence. So I want to read some scriptures to try to confirm what I'm talking about. I'd like for us to go to Genesis, the 18th chapter, and look at verse 19. Genesis chapter 18 and verse 19. He says here, and he's talking about Abraham, and it's it's right after Abraham and has got the word that God's going to destroy Sodom. Let's start in verse 17. And the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham this thing which I do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. So God is saying Abraham is going to become the father of a great nation. And I feel obligated to let him know what's fixing to transpire. And he says in verse 19, for I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, and the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. So God was saying, I have confidence in Abraham. Did you know that if God had confidence in Abraham, I want you to tell me what the probability is that Abraham had confidence with his relationship with the Lord. Do you think Abraham felt sketchy, if you'll let me use that word, in his relationship with the Lord? I don't believe so. I believe Abraham, he did everything he knew how to do. He offered sacrifices. He how did he get over here in the first place? By listening to the Lord and doing what the Lord told him to. He left his homeland and he had moved away from where he come from. He was endeavoring to follow the Lord. So I believe that it's a very fair assumption to say that Abraham's level of confidence in his contact with the Lord was pretty good. And God had confidence in him. Let's turn now to Job, the first chapter, and notice the first verse. We've read this not so long ago, but let's read it again. Job chapter 1 and verse 1, he says, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright and one that feared God and eschewed evil." That's what the writer of the book of Job said. Now let's look down in verse 8. "And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil?" So, here again, God says, I've got confidence in this man. It's like Abraham. I know how he lives, and I believe that I believe I know how he's going to act. And here he said about Job, he's a perfect and an upright man, as perfect as a human can be, and he fears God and eschews evil. And we just read a verse just earlier over in the 19th chapter where Job said, "I know my Redeemer liveth." So there's a level of confidence on both sides. You see what I'm talking about? It's not this wonderment of, oh, there's a big God and he created things and he's going to call everybody into question and we're going to stand before his judgment seat and he's going to smack the gavel and say guilty or not guilty, but we don't know what he's going to say. That's a tactic of the enemy, and it's a tactic of misinformation to cause us to be confused and to be disoriented. I believe with all of my heart that we can live a life not in self-confidence, but we can live a life in confidence that we're pleasing to the Lord. How else would Job and how else would Abraham ever get in a place where God would be willing to testify for them? Okay? God had a high level of confidence in Abraham and Job. And I believe that Abraham and Job exhibited a high level of confidence in God's abilities and in their own personal integrity. So where does that leave us? Judgment. I'd like for us to turn to 1 Kings, the 4th chapter, and notice an account here where judgment was given. And may the Lord help us to be able to realize how judgment happens. So the setting here is that Solomon was king, and I'm sorry, it's 1 Kings, the 3rd chapter. Solomon was king, and two women that lived in the same house both had a child within 3 days of each other. Now, if you have a child that's a week old and somebody that you live in the same household with had a child that was a week and 3 days old, it would be pretty easily for the untrained eye to say, well, two babies, same size, same gender, they were in this case, and they look pretty much the same, maybe. Assuming that these two women were from the same tribe or the same nationality and ethnicity. And so I want to read here, beginning in verse 24. And the situation is that one of the children had died. And the woman that her child had died, she snuck over and swapped her baby for the live baby. Basically stole it and traded. That's a pretty mean trick, isn't it? So you get up in the morning and wake up and to a dead baby, that would be devastating. And so it came before Solomon, and Solomon's trying to decide who the child belongs to, and both of them says, the live one is mine. And so he said, here's the way we're going to do this. He said, verse 24, he said, the king said, bring me a sword. And they brought a sword before the king, and the king said, divide the living child in two, and give half to one and half to the other. Then spake the woman whose living child was unto the king, for her bowels yearned upon her son, and she said, O my Lord, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. But the other said, let it be neither mine nor thine, but divide it. You see what happened here? There was a judgment that needed to be made. And you know, the woman that it was her child, she would rather her child be alive than for it to be sacrificed in a manner like this. But the woman that had already lost her child, she was jealous. She didn't want the other woman to. So he said, then the king answered and said, give her the living child and in no wise slay it. She is the mother thereof. And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment. You know, the Lord is going to pass judgment judiciously on us. He's not going to arbitrarily, he's not going to wake up and stump his toe and then judge you guilty because his toe hurts. He's not going to be in a bad mood and send the next 50 people to eternal punishment because something kind of ruffled his feathers. He's not going to do that. And we can live a life of integrity and expect judicial judgment of welcome home. Enter in to the blessings of the Lord. We can expect that. And we can also expect the consequence if we don't. The judgment day is going to be a very judicial verdict on our eternal destination. The Lord knows. Some people think that maybe Solomon had already discerned by the way these two women were acting, some people feel like Solomon had already discerned who the mother was, but he did this, one commentator said, because he wanted everyone else there to be able to see who the real mother was. It would be no question. You know, there's going to be no question of why the Lord would tell someone, depart from me, you worker of iniquity. There's not going to be a question. It's not going to be, how did I get in this whirlwind? And how did, I don't even know the answers to these questions. It's not going to be like that. We're going to know why the Lord has to say, depart from me, I never knew you. It's not going to be a surprise. That's the point I want us to get this morning. This woman responded this way because it was her child. It really was her child. It wasn't the other person just wanted to take it away from her. There's nobody can take this away from us. Our eternal reward of being with the Lord is something that we can have a very high level of confidence in. 2 Timothy 2:15. We know what that says, don't we? Study to shew you. What are you studying for? Study to shew thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. That's why we come here. That's why we read our Bibles. That's why we pray. That's why we ask the Lord to help us to meditate on the good things. Lord, show me. Search my heart. That's why we do all of those things. Study so we can shew ourselves approved before God. So we've been doing something with the fellows at work. We have a day at lunchtime. We do some training every week on Thursday. You want to come? We'll let you be part of it. At 12:30, we give people 30 minutes to eat their lunch. And so something we've been doing now about 3 weeks is a little math drill. Hand out a piece of paper face down. It's simple multiplication. And we'll probably move on to something else. 100 questions, like 9 times 4 and 5 times 5 and 10 times 11 and that kind of stuff. 12 times 12 is going to be the biggest one you see. 100 questions, we'll give them 5 minutes. The whole purpose is that we hone that skill. I had a teacher who was passionate about me learning multiplication tables. I'm passionate about the fellows that work there being able to do this kind of math in their heads. Not being confused. There's so many times as working in my field that you need to know the math facts just like that and be able to make a decision. We need to study. Yes. There are scriptures that we've read over and over again, but we need to keep reading them. There will be a little nugget that pops out. You know how we get messages? I could get one off a line. You know that? There's places that you could go and, you know, I use eSword quite a bit because it's convenient. And I can compile some notes and some scriptures, and it's easy for me to search, and I'm probably, in some respects, it probably makes me lazy. But you know, eSword has messages that I could get into too. I don't, all right? So if you're searching for this one, it didn't come from there. You know, messages many times comes to me because of I'm studying, I'm reading, I'm meditating, I'm asking the Lord, Lord, give me something that I can share with the congregation that would be beneficial. I want us to be able to realize we can approach the judgment with a level of confidence. It's not going to be a whirlwind. It may seem like it. It's not going to be a speculation of, I wonder how this is going to turn out. It's not going to be like pulling the lever on a slot machine or whatever you do at a slot machine. I don't know. It's not going to be like spinning the wheel and wondering where it's going to land. We're going to know. When we get there, it's going to be with a sense of realization, not a sense of speculation. I want you to take that home with us. It's going to be a sense of realization, not a sense of speculation. A realization I've had my whole life to make things right with the Lord, and I didn't. I've had my whole life. I had the last week. I had the last month. I had the last year to get things right, and I didn't. That's going to be the realization we approach eternity with. Or it's going to be, thank you, Lord. I've endeavored to cross every T that you pointed out that I needed to cross. I've been dotting my I's. I've been living to all that I know and understand. And by your grace and your strength and your mercy to me, I'm approaching the judgment with confidence. And I'm anticipating you being able to say to me, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Not because of something great I've done. It's because we've been willing to apply ourselves to the dealings of the Spirit. I'd like to conclude this morning over in Jeremiah, the 29th chapter. And notice what Jeremiah says, writing from Jerusalem, because they give him a bad time and then they left him. Jeremiah 29 and 11. He's writing to the children of Israel that have been, the Jews that have been carried off to Babylon. And he says, we could read more of it to get the sense of it, but he's saying, this is what God says. All right? I'm writing to you. This is what the Lord told me to tell you. He says, for I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. To give you what kind of end? An expected end. I've lived all my life trying to, I'm speaking third person here. We can say, I've lived all my life. I went to church. I read my Bible. Tried to do what was right. Who knows how it'll end? Is that the way it's going to be? No, that's not the way it's going to be. If we've sincerely applied ourselves, if we've sincerely responded to the dealings of the Spirit, we have an expected end, not a speculated end. We can look with expectation, not speculation. We can look to the judgment. It's a time that I can write 100 answers in 5 minutes with no mistakes, a very few mistakes. Maybe miss one. You know, if you're very good at that, you can do that in 2 minutes. You can do 100 in 2 minutes. You don't believe me? Practice it a few times. You can do it. If you know it, just write it down and move on. You can do 100 in 2 minutes. I'm talking about multiplication tables. Judgments, tests, and difficulties are not without hope when it comes to our relationship with God. God has an expected end for us. And the expected end is victory. Victory is our watchword in our song. That's what the Lord wants for us. And that's what we can have with His grace and strength and power. Victory is a watchword that we can live with, we can live by. The judgment is something we can approach with confidence, never arrogance. I'd like to look at the Apostle Paul in closing out our thought this morning in 2 Timothy chapter 4. And notice what the Apostle Paul said. 2 Timothy chapter 4, beginning in verse 6, he says, for I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. He knew that his life was coming to a close. It wasn't going to be long, and he would leave. He said, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Hence, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, that's where judgment is passed out, right? The Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day. And not to me only. I'm not the only one. Guess who else can do this? It says, but unto all them also that love his appearance, his appearing. Did you know that reaches all the way down to me today? It reaches all the way down to us right now today. I want us to realize that we can approach the difficulties in life knowing that God has an answer, a solution for the dilemma that you're facing. He knows how to get you out of the sticky place that you got yourself in. He knows how to bring reconciliation. He knows how to bring consolation. He knows how to bring an answer. He knows how to take you out of this life with victory being your watchword. That you can go out of this life expecting to have an end like the Apostle Paul. He said, very plainly, he said, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness. Do you think Paul was speculating that, I wonder what my odds are that the Lord will invite me into his glorious eternal abode? What do you think he, do you think he really was worried? I don't think he was. And if he wasn't worried, why should I be worried? The only reason I should worry is if I'd be unwilling to respond like Paul did. How did he respond? You remember what happened on the day that he was on the road to Damascus. When the light shone down around him, he said what? What did he say? Who art thou, Lord? When the Lord brings something in our life, we say, Lord, is that you? What do you want me to do with this? And the Lord told him, didn't he? He said, you go on into the city and there's going to be a man to come and pray with you. Lord, help us to listen to what the Lord says and respond the right way. Because if we do, you know, we can meet the judgment. I don't know. I'm just going to speculate that I could hand out one of those 100 question things today to all of you here. And there would be a level of confidence that all of you would approach that with. Some of you might be thinking today, I know I can do 105 minutes. And some of you might say, I don't know, but I think I can. I might be a little bit rusty, but I know if we'd done it every Sunday for a year, you could do it in 5 minutes. I'm not going to start that, okay? We're here to learn the facts about approaching the judgment with confidence, not just knowing our math facts. But it's nice to know math facts, too. I believe that, how do you get that confidence? It's by preparing, by learning, by applying ourselves. Lord, help me to not live my life haphazardly, not speculating, but cultivating a level of expectation and let victory be our watchword. I believe with all of my heart that we don't have to fear the judgment because we know it's coming. Right? We know it's coming. We know what it takes to meet that judgment and we know what it takes to pass. All we got to do is do it. When the Lord speaks to us, respond. You ever tried to do your taxes after not keeping books for the whole year? Pretty stressed, isn't it? You don't keep your books up to date, and you come to the end of the year, and it's tough to do taxes. But if you do your books on a weekly basis, a daily basis, a monthly basis, the end of the year is not that bad. It's just maybe checking some stuff off. Lord, help us to keep our experience up to date, and we can approach the judgment with confidence. You pray for me.